Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Jeeps, pool sharks, the past, the present, high stakes and high altitudes. This week on Tempest. I'm David Obuchowski. Welcome to Tempest, a series that explores our hilarious, heartbreaking, complicated, and sometimes crazy relationships with cars. Now, this story, you know the saying, you had to be there? Well, this is one of those stories where I really did want to be there. And I want to take you there too, even if the story itself happened 45 years ago. Now, in this case, there is Colorado, a state which, ironically, I just moved 1,000 miles away from shortly before recording this. So, I caught a flight back to the place I once called home.
Spirit Airlines would like to welcome you to Denver, Colorado, where the local time is approximately 11:29 a.m. Please remain seated with your seatbelt securely.
Hold on, this is the terminal. All passengers, please exit and follow signs to ground transportation and baggage claim. Please watch your step.
Waiting to pick me up, the main character of the story, a man named David.
Welcome to Denver, Colorado, partner.
Hey, thank you so much.
We hop into David's truck and we hit the road to begin the journey. Along the way, I ask him to tell me about himself.
How old are you?
Well, let's see, 68. 68.
And you said you're from Oklahoma.
Yep.
Where in Oklahoma?
Well, grew up in Tulsa. I grew up right next to the Arkansas River, so I'm kind of a river rat.
I asked him about Tulsa in the 60s. What was it like?
A lot of cruising going on, a lot of carousing going on, and kind of like the Clapton song, After Midnight. Well, you know, that's what was going on in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There was the classic drive-in hamburger joint. You cruise through there, whether you're hungry or not, that didn't matter. You're just going to come through with your, you know, your GTO, your Z28, your Plymouth GTX. It was pretty cool, you know, so it was a lot of exhaust. We were breathing along with our hamburger.
But there was something else besides hot rods and hamburgers. And this is important considering where this story is going to take us.
There was also, you know, a pool hall across the street, which where I could be found. You know, that's where I got my street cred, I think, you know, hanging out at the pool hall. Now, this is a little bit of the underbelly of South Peoria Street. This is where, you know, a lot of gambling and pool playing went on, and so that was another place that we hung out quite a bit.
How frequently were you at the pool hall?
Too frequently. A couple of times my dad came in and he yanked me out of there. Of course, there's nothing more embarrassing than having your old man come in and pull you out of the pool hall.
But back to cars for a second. Remember when David was talking about the GTOs, the GTXs, the Z28s? He wasn't exactly driving those kinds of machines.
Back then, I didn't have anything that was red hot, but I did actually buy and made payments on an MG Midget. So I went British. Of course, they were horrible cars. They're like Jeeps, of course.
They were like Jeeps. And David should know because David's a Jeep guy. And I talked to someone else for the story who's also a Jeep guy. His name, well, his name's also David, actually. His name is David Tracy, and he's a writer with Jalopnik. And when I told him we were going to be talking about Jeeps, he said,
"Oof, a topic near to my heart. Let's do it."
In case you're wondering about David Tracy's Jeep credentials, he's got them.
My first vehicle was a Jeep. That's what I learned to drive on. It was a 98 Grand Cherokee. We lived in eastern Kansas near the Missouri River. We had a lot of fun with that Jeep in the floodplains, and I was hooked at that point, to the point where I resolved to go into engineering so that I could work at Jeep. And it became a deep obsession. Subsequently, I have purchased somewhere around 9 additional Jeeps. I currently have 7 in total.
And that dream he had about working for Jeep, he made it come true.
Yes, yeah, that was a dream. It was really lucky timing, too, because as soon as I got there, the JL, so the newest generation Wrangler program, began. And I was lucky enough to lay the foundation for the cooling systems for all powertrains on the JL Wrangler, which, you know, came in at 21 years old and, yeah, achieved my dream. It was great.
As for the other David.
I moved out to Colorado, roughly 1970. You know, that's kind of where my little Jeep history started, back right about then.
Almost immediately, he took on a number of Jeeps, including a 56 Willys pickup, a 69 CJ5, and his beloved 1958 CJ5. In case you don't know your Jeep history, here's David Tracy to fill you in on why the CJ5 and CJ5s of that era are so special.
The CJ5 is an interesting one because it's the first CJ without that's not a flat fender Jeep. So Jeep started out in World War II as the Willys MB or the Ford GPW. They were kind of the same thing. Then came the M38A1, which was a military vehicle. And that vehicle, so in the 50s, the M38A1 spawned the CJ5. So the CJ5 it's just a demilitarized M38A1. And actually, this 1958 that you're talking about still has some remnants from the military version. Like you can see a cutout in the hood for the snorkel and then a little notch on the driver's side of the hood for the blackout lights. So yeah, it's a really cool, civilianized military Jeep.
Now, 1970 wasn't just the year David got into Jeeps. It was also the year David and his family relocated to Colorado. They moved to a place called Fairplay. It's a small town, though you may be familiar with it already.
Is it true that Fairplay is South Park? That where that TV show is supposed to take place is actually supposed to be Fairplay?
Yeah, it is. And of course they went crazy with it, you know what I mean? They used the town as a sort of a place to just comment on everything going on in the world, you know, and nobody's safe.
After only 1 year in Colorado, Dave, with the help of his brother Flip, bought a house. Not just any house, but an imposing Victorian on a hill.
Tall gables, sort of darkish looking windows, not for any other reason, but they just kind of looked that way. They're original windows, by the way, you know. Finally, a gal named Sandra Dallas, who's a somewhat well-known author. She did a book on Colorado Victorian homes. Our Fairplay home was featured in that book, and it was, she claimed that the town knew it as the haunted house of Fairplay.
Here's David's wife, Pat.
David bought the house in 1971 when he was only 21 years old, and then it certainly looked real rustic, And when I moved to Colorado, my first thought was it looked like the house on Psycho.
But this story isn't just about ghosts. Only, well, it kind of is. It's about a time that's long past, about a Jeep that's long gone, a bar that's now just an abandoned building, and a person who David once was, but who no longer is. Coming up in Chapter 2, A Ride Goes Wrong. We head up to Fairplay. Along the way, we stop off for a beer at a friendly restaurant called the Shaggy Sheep, not far from where everything went down in 1974. Pat tells me about the early days of their relationship.
Oh, yeah, he's a smooth operator. Yeah, he is.
A smooth operator who knew his way around a pool table.
We would always drive up here and stop at all these little bars, and he would play pool and win a lot of money. And then we'd go out to eat because he would play pool and win money. Everybody would have their eyes on him and it'd be real quiet. I mean, he was really good. I mean, that was definitely his sport. I don't think he was a good football player in high school ever, but he was a great pool player. I mean, that was definitely his glory. I never saw him lose. Yeah.
David wasn't kidding when he said he'd haunt the pool halls back in Tulsa as a teen. That's where he learned his stuff and watched the Hustlers.
These guys are, probably could have been preachers. You know, I mean, they know how to work the crowd. And, of course, they're fun to watch because they're extremely good. But usually it's maybe some stranger that kind of walks into the pool hall. somebody from across the across town or something. They know there's a game going on there. They think they're pretty good. And maybe they're the hustler, you know. Some of these guys also got hustled themselves. They had to.
When he got to Colorado, he didn't miss a beat. He found his people.
You know, I was kind of part of a group of people up here, guys, of course, that were doing this. We were all fashioned ourselves, I guess, as pool sharks. There's one, a sucker born every minute, as they say. Well, you know, they walk into the pool hall. That's what was going on back in those days. And it was just part of the fraternity that I was hanging around with. I'm not going to say they were, it wasn't the church crowd, certainly.
And where did this fraternity of pool sharks hang out?
It's called the Platte River Inn. The guy that used to own it, his name was Walter.
The Platte River Inn was in Grant, Colorado, quite close to Fairplay. Now, Dave may call himself a pool shark, but he's clear. There's a difference. A shark plays pool for money, but a hustler hustles.
I'm honestly going to tell you, I was never a hustler. I always tried to do my best. I wasn't trying to con anybody into a game just for the sake of really emptying their pockets. So, you know, for me, I showed them my best game from the first break to the last break, whatever that was.
We arrive at the haunted house in the early evening. It's a striking structure, and there's no question why it's called what it's called. Seems more like a place Edward Gorey and Edgar Allan Poe might go halvesies on rather than a couple kids from Oklahoma, but hey, what do I know? And anyway, as striking as the house is, there's something else that catches my attention. It's a Jeep, a very unique Jeep.
An 1981 Jeep Cherokee Laredo, and that was the name of, it's a Wagoneer, so it's also known as the full-size Jeep, or in Jeep terminology, it's FSJ. It's kind of dented up, but you know, everywhere where I drive it, people just love the daggum thing, and they want to know, you know, what it is. A lot of them, of course, a lot of guys are sort of millennial types. They're younger. They go, what in the heck is that thing, you know?
What makes this particular Jeep so tough to pin down is the front end.
When they first came out with this model, they had what a Jeep enthusiast called the Gladiator grill. And it's kind of a vertical bar grill. And it kind of comes to a point up in the middle of the car. Kind of has the image of a chariot, you know. Remember the Ben-Hur movie? So it kind of has that look, you know, it has that peak in it, which gives it kind of an aggressive look. Like I'm ready to take on that mountain and nothing can stop me.
What's so genuinely cool about this is that these grills he's talking about, they only appeared on Jeeps in the early to mid 60s. His is a 1981.
It was easily converted. This is an 81, so I mean, you're talking about a Jeep that came down 20 years later. And of course, Jeeps are famous for really not changing the model much. You know, they changed owners quite a bit, but the model kind of stayed the same.
Like David Tracy, once a Jeep guy, always a Jeep guy, I guess. We go in the house, sip a couple whiskeys, nibble on some food, and as darkness falls and the temperature plummets, Dave stokes a fire in the wood-burning stove and we get comfortable. It's story time. I'm going to let him tell this, but I do need to fill in some gaps here and there. So just to set the stage, it's 1974. Dave's in his early 20s, living with his brother and his brother's girlfriend here at the haunted house.
You know, we're living here. You know, we were working construction.
Now, this when you say we...
My brother and I.
You and your brother's name?
Flip.
Okay.
Yeah. Philip, but he was Flip.
For fun, obviously, Dave plays pool, but also, they ride horses. In fact...
We were dabbling a bit in rodeo and competing just in local little stuff here. I mean, we were actually members of the state, you know, Colorado State Rodeo Association at that time. We were, you know, we could ride a horse, we could rope, but we just weren't quite, you know, right there to be, you know, anything big.
So these guys are hardly renting horses, which, is that even a thing you can do, rent a horse? What do I know? I'm just a guy from New Jersey. My point is, they're the real deal. They, you know, own horses, including a filly. Now, if you're, again, like me, and from New Jersey, you probably think of filly as a cheesesteak, and yes, you'd be right about that, but in this case, what we're really talking about is a young female horse that is not yet fully trained.
Well, I think it was a Sunday or something, and we decide we're all going to go for a ride. Okay, great. So, you know, kind of maybe a little short on horses, long on riders. I said, that's no big deal. I'll just ride the filly. Also short of saddles and various other things, like bridles, bits, and so forth. Well, I'll just ride the filly bareback. How's that?
Famous last words.
Well, something happened. The filly just absolutely came uncorked. She kind of blows up, and I come off the horse in a very bad way, right onto a hard, you know, hard-packed road, gravel road. I just didn't land right, you know, and it crippled me. I mean, I was, like, in pain.
Writhing in agony on the ground, Dave called out to his companions for help.
You know, they got me into a vehicle eventually and got me to a hospital. I think we had to drive 40 miles to get to a hospital.
The doctor checks him out, and as Dave explains...
So I was bent up pretty good. Nothing broken, though, in the end. Nothing broken.
But the pain was considerable.
Lots of pain. So I get a bottle of pills, you know, to kind of take the pain away. Well, these are their Valium.
This presented a problem for Dave.
I can't work, you know, because I'm doing construction. It's physical work. And so I call my present employer. I say, you know, I really can't come to work. I've hurt myself over the weekend. So
this got him thinking.
I couldn't work construction, but I could play pool.
And remember, Pat had never even seen the guy lose.
You know, I was a fairly good pool player. Had my own custom stick, Brunswick stick, and something that cost some dough that you carry around in a case, you know.
A plan starts coming together now.
What happens is my buddy from Oklahoma, he's up here as well, and we decide to go down the highway about 25 miles to a little town called Grant, Colorado, on Highway 285 to a little inn called the Platte River Inn. And I know the guy that owns the place. His name's Walter. Well, I happen to know he's a pool player.
Coming up in Chapter 3, The Long, Long Night.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before the break, you heard how David was injured on a horse ride. Unable to work construction, he gets the idea to earn some cash another way. And so, with his buddy, he heads down to the Platte River Inn.
Of course, naturally, we're drinking a beer, which is the last thing I need to do. Fortunately, my buddy's driving. I was so bent up. Couldn't even drive a car. Of course, shouldn't have been driving a car, and I didn't.
And then, custom cue in its case, they arrive.
We get started on playing some pool. Well, there's quite a few people around, you know, and you put the quarters up, and it's a bar table.
So the beers are flowing, the time is ticking, and the bets are getting a little bit bigger.
You know, we were throwing the money around. It was, you know, out in full view of everybody, and sometimes when the money got so big, it was actually we had an audience, you know, just like you might see on TV. Everything stops, the jukebox quits playing. And all people are doing, they're ordering drinks and they're watching this crazy pool game for big money going down in front of them. And, you know, it was exciting.
Exciting, but before long.
It gets kind of out of hand. Now, we're talking 1970s. I kind of forget maybe the actual dollar amounts because I think in today's dollars it would be many thousands of dollars that were laid down in 1970-something dollars. I don't think it got to 10,000. There may be sometimes it edged up 6, 8, you know, but somebody, you know, it did. I mean, and it's getting late. I mean, the pool games just keep going and going and going. Eventually, it's down to me and Walter. And the other guys are out. You know, either they've lost their money, have lost their interest, or they've gone home. But now it's getting late. And Walter and I keep this thing going. With Walter, it was back and forth. And I was up, then he was up. I was up, then he was up. After a night of this, I mean, seriously, the sun was coming up the next morning, and we're playing pool. So I'm up, I'm down. I'm up, I'm down. And, you know, I've got Walter by the tail, and then pretty soon, not much longer, he's got me. It goes back and forth all night long, and it got into some really dangerous numbers. Fatigue sets in. I'm not even aware of what time it is. These pool games just kept going and going and going. The beers, the pills, the pain conspired against me eventually. Too many beers, too many cigarettes, too many pills, you know. I mean, I just finally wore down, you know. I was worn out. I was in pain. I see the red sky out the window, which tells me it's got to be 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning now. So I had to finally give up. I cratered.
And so it was time for David to settle up with Walter.
I did lose all my cash. The cash out of my pocket was gone. And then I lost what I knew I had in the savings account in the bank. I knew what I had there. That was committed. The cash out of my bank account was gone. You know, Walter was taking my word for what I had. And then when that ran out, I said, well, you know, I can't keep playing because, you know, I'm out of dough. He says, well, what do you got? You know, I started going through the inventory. It wasn't much, but I had this Jeep that I hadn't owned too long. It's kind of a cool Jeep. It's a 58, a CJ5, I believe it was, a 58 CJ5. What made it kind of unique, I guess, was it had a V8 in it. None of it felt good. I did not feel good about having, you know, it was one of those passbook savings account where you'd take a couple $100 and put it in the bank. And then I lost all my dough, and then I lost the Jeep. And, that got, you know, my pride was pretty hurt. It was, you know, the car was really maybe one of the better assets I had. It had the V8 in it. You know, that was attractive back then, you know. So, you know, I mean, I didn't hear the end of it for a very long time around here.
Part of my traveling all the way back to Colorado to do this story was to hear it in person instead of, say, on the phone. But a big reason is also because the Platte River Inn is still there. Or I should say, the building is. I wanted to see it for myself, so the next day we hopped into the grill-swapped Wagoneer and headed down Highway 285 to Grant, Colorado.
All right, buddy. This is deja vu. We're leaving Fairplay right now, and we're going to be kind of heading sort of northeast in the direction of Denver, Colorado. But we're headed for Grant. And we're going to kind of nurse it down the road. It may get a little noisy because I've got these giant 33s.
This is the route that you took. This is from the haunted house to the bar. So this pretty much would have been exactly what you would have driven that fateful evening.
Yeah, the road hasn't changed.
How does this thing drive compared to the CJ5, the 58?
Well, it drives like a dream. This is my saying, so maybe if you hear it somewhere, I made it up, but I kind of joke that you don't really steer a Jeep, you kind of just herd it, you know, like a herd of sheep.
Before long, our talk of Jeeps turns back to that fateful night.
Who gets to decide when we're done? I mean, if it's swinging like a pendulum back and forth, and then it swings in your favor, and all of a sudden, Walt owes you the equivalent of $8,000 in today's dollars.
Yeah.
You know, couldn't you conceivably at that point just say, all right, I'm done. What is the etiquette? The gambler's etiquette, the shark's etiquette. How does that work?
There's no rule book, obviously, on that. I think, in my mind, if you're way up and then you want to quit because you got it over your opponent, I think in gambling circles there is kind of a requirement. You got to stick around and make that win stick. In other words, maybe even beat him even worse.
But David didn't beat him even worse. In fact, just the opposite. Before long, we pull into an abandoned building on Highway 285.
But this is the scene. We are parked in front of the Platte River Inn.
Yeah, we're looking in it. The sign's gone. This place has probably not been open for, I'm going to guess, at least 20 years. And maybe longer.
Let's get out and look around a little bit.
Let's take a look. Take a look.
Coming up in the final chapter, the past, the present, the Platte River Inn.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We step out into the small parking lot, completely empty and overgrown with weeds.
And there was a sign right there?
Oh, yeah, Platte River Inn. Long gone. Of course, it's just a skeleton of a sign, right? If you went in this door, the pool table was right there.
These are all spider webs in here?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this thing is not...
It's been shut down for a long time. It's been abandoned. I'm not sure of the ownership here anymore. And it's quite possible it's kind of coated out. You know, maybe there's so many things wrong, too close to the highway and various things with sewer and water, that it may never become that kind of a place again. A restaurant, a bar. Yeah, this place is kind of funky, you know. It's got kind of a Swiss, like it's a Swiss chalet or something, you know, the trim.
Yeah.
It couldn't be an uglier color. I don't even know what to call that.
Was there bar fights outside ever? Was it a rowdy joint, or was it sort of a cheers, everyone knows each other kind of place?
I think in any of these places back then, if you wanted to get in a bar fight, you could get in one. Back in those days, we're talking Vietnam had just ended. You know, the dress of the day was long hair, bell bottoms, minimal dress, bare, you know, the old sign out front, no shoes, no shirt, no service. That was directly, pointed at hippies. And you come up here, this was conservative redneck country. It still kind of is. It's a conservative county. It mostly leans Republican. So it's ranch country, you know.
It's funny how some things change and how some things don't. The Platte River Inn, once a bustling roadhouse pool hall where people were betting thousands of dollars, not to mention their most prized possessions, now just an ugly old abandoned building that looks like it's being reclaimed by the mountains behind it and the weeds beneath it. The CJ5 that Dave saw parked out in front of the joint for years after the loss, that's now gone as well. Where? He has no idea. David himself has changed. Once a carefree cowboy, he went into finance, though he certainly applied the lessons of his past to his career.
There's no question that an event like that would have shaped some of my thoughts, you know, later in life, about accumulating assets and so forth.
Of course, for David Tracy, this was a lesson he feels our hero paid too dearly to learn.
I mean, look, I don't think I would ever even put the Jeep up as an option. You know, if you love it that much, you can't do it. It's too risky. It's too great of a vehicle.
And as for Walter, well, he's gone to.
Walter, my friend Walter, of course he was older. He died right here in the parking lot, quite possibly right where we're standing. He died right here of a heart attack. So, rest in peace, Walter.
Yeah, I feel like we should ask
him. Well, he got a little bit of my money, but, that's okay. Walter was a good guy. We remain friends. You just got to pay your gambling debts. That's all there is to it.
Jeeps have changed too, of course. They have electronic fuel injection now, and airbags, and power steering, and on and on and on. But one thing that hasn't changed about Jeeps are their allure, their romance. It's something David Tracy says dates back to World War II.
It could be the fact that they liberated so many people, that they were the face of the Allies. That could be. I mean, that's how I think it started. I once wrote an article about what happened when my grandpa, my opa in Germany, first got a ride in an Allied Jeep, and he was a German and an American soldier in a Jeep drove up to him, and he rode in that Jeep and fell in love. There's something about them.
But more than just the old days, the Davids agree that Jeep has always been about something else.
It takes them to places they couldn't get in the sedan.
The heritage is one thing. For me, the biggest thing is the experiences I've had in Jeeps. So I've done some incredible off-roading with good friends and built, great friendships around, these off-road adventures. You find an obstacle that you think, oh my gosh, this is too steep, or this mud hole's too deep, or whatever. And, you somehow make it through, or you get stuck and you figure out a way out. And so, that's what draws me in, is being able to just do incredible things with these vehicles.
Maybe that bleary early morning the CJ5 hadn't given David a way out of some muddy field or down some rocky slope. But as he observes...
this is a case where the Jeep kind of saved my butt. In a different way.
In the car enthusiast world, you can find a joke about any car.
You got your Ford guys, you got your Chevy guys, you got your Jeep guys. Well, they like to take the name Ford, F-O-R-D, and take that an acronym and say, you know what Ford is. It's fix or repair daily, or, found on road dead.
With Jeep, the Davids are both familiar with the old saying.
J-E-E-P. Just empty every pocket.
It's funny, but it strikes me that in the case of David and that long night of pool, it was true in a very literal way.
Would you say that morning after you lost to Walt, that you just emptied every pocket?
I sure did. I absolutely, as I said, I lost the money in my pocket. I lost the money in my little savings account. And then sign over the title.
And so we head back. Me to my family, David to his. Time passes, things change. And yet, here we are in a 40-year-old Jeep. David Tracy's probably driving one just as old, if not older, this very moment. And so are a lot of people. They're going wheeling. Or maybe just heading to the beach. Maybe they're telling stories about the Willys their grandfathers drove in the war, about the Renegades their buddies had in high school, about the Cherokees that were their own first cars. I think Jeeps are always going to be kind of iconic in a way. In fact, I'm positive. I'd bet my Jeep on it. Or I would if I had one. Thanks for listening to Tempest. This episode was written, hosted, and produced by me, David Opachowski. I also did the music with some help from my longtime collaborator and friend, Kenny Appel. The theme song is by Distant Correspondent. Visit the show on the web at tempestpodcast.com. Follow the show on Twitter at tempestpodcast. Please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to Tempest. Also, tell your friends about it. And if you have any questions, comments, or compelling car stories, get in touch with me. Tempest at tempestpodcast.com. Till next week.